Hello, this is Terry Patton, and I'm here with Raphael Kushner. Raf asked me to interview him as a kind of a turnaround in response to all the interviews he did in Teaching What We Need to Learn and the Vulnerability Project to turn the tables and give Raf a chance to be interviewed and pressed beyond his comfort zone. And although I empathize with every bit of his discomfort, I have steeled myself against the pain of doing this, and I'm ready to hold your feet to the fire, Raf. So welcome.
All right. Thank you so much for doing this, and I'm really glad, and I'm curious, too, because I know I did share a lot about my own life and my own circumstances in the series, especially to try to warm up the possibility for others to do the same, but now it's direct. It's not my choice. It's your choice as the leader of this conversation, so I look forward to it.
Yeah, great. Well, you know, I think it probably will be of great interest to people just leading into this to ask you to reflect on what this was like for you emotionally and energetically, and what it was you thought you were signing up for, and what it was you discovered you had signed up for that was different or more than what you thought, and what it asked of you, and what that brought up for you, and so what your journey through that territory has been like as a process of growth and stretching and learning for you.
And by this, I'm thinking that you mean the series and everything that's, you know.
I mean the series and perhaps the launch of the Vulnerability Project. This mm-hmm. has been a whole project that most of the people listening to us now have accompanied you on, at least a significant portion of. So,
yeah, I get it.
I want to refer to that.
Yeah. Well, when I was first thinking of doing this project, it was, I could say almost there was a little bit of like a hubris and maybe even a kind of I dare you rebellion type experience. In other words, people would say, oh, Raphael, you know, you should do a teleseminar. Those are really good things to do for a person who's an author, who's moving into a bigger presence online. And I would always say kind of cavalierly, well, I don't want to do the usual kind of teleseminar. If I'm going to do something, it's going to be different. And the thing that I'm thinking of doing is something called Teaching What We Need to Learn, where people would actually get real with me as opposed to just recite their usual stuff that they go from interview to interview, you know, repeating. And I would say that, and I'd hear myself say it, and I would think, are you really going to do that, and is that really possible? And I even wondered, was I saying it as a dodge, a way out of doing a teleseminar, since I really thought that most people wouldn't do that with me because I didn't have a big enough profile, they didn't know me. And also, there's a lot of risk in revealing oneself apart from the persona that you usually bring, you know, in the public sphere when you're teaching your stuff. So that was the beginning. And then I put out the word to like three or four people. And at first I didn't really hear anything back from them. So I thought, okay, well maybe, you know, my assumption was right. This doesn't have legs. You know, let it go. And then I just sat with it for a while and decided, well, I don't think I have enough data. So I widened the pool of people who I sent an invitation to. And lo and behold, they started responding and saying, yes, they would do it. And I think I had one of those, oh, crap moments, because then I realized, okay, now I really have to do this. And then that started the next phase of the project. And during that project, it was just a tremendous amount of rolling up the sleeves and attending to lots and lots of details and spending many, many late nights. Because as you know, but maybe some of our listeners don't know, some of us people who seem like we've got it together and that maybe we have a crack team of assistants working with us often it's just us and a few other people sometimes, if we're lucky and if we have a big enough budget, who are trying to pull this stuff together. So listeners probably know also that I have health issues around chronic fatigue syndrome and limited amount of good energy hours in the day. So I took it on, and there was a greater strain in my life and in my family because my available hours got already smaller, and that was contracting to me. I felt stress and tension around that, but I knew it was still the right thing to do. And then once the series started, I think that I was really fed by the conversations I had. I was grateful for people and the way they showed up. Each one was different. I noticed I kind of showed up a little bit differently in response to each person. And, you know, I think I mentioned once in one of the interviews that I've always wanted to be a talk show host. It's one of my, like, secret ambitions or inspirations. And midway through the series, I realized, wait, I just created that for myself. Like, I just made a talk show, and I get to talk to people who are the exact people I'd want to talk to. So I felt just incredibly enlivened and energized by that process. And that was another big piece of what was revealed for me. And then midway through the series, I started to feel like, well, it was a fear. You know, am I really delivering? Am I really getting people to share what is truly vulnerable and would be helpful to people out there in the world? And there are even some interviews where I asked a person a question, and then they kind of gave me a non-helpful response, and I tried politely to ask it again, and then even sometimes a third time. And in a couple of those interviews, it didn't go anywhere, but sometimes it took the third asking of the question to get the conversation to open up. And what I found in the feedback that I was getting was that a little bit goes a really long way. So people were incredibly grateful at the degree of openness that people in the series were sharing, even if sometimes I felt like maybe we didn't get there. Maybe we could have done more. And then, of course, there are individual standouts, like the interview I did with you, where you decided going in, I'm just going to go for this, and took it to a really beautiful and, in some ways, risky extreme. But for the most part, it was a delicate dance trying to assess where we could go with each person and how far we could go with each person. And then I was just really attuned to that through the rest of the interviews. And so that was another aspect of it. And then as we were getting towards the end, I was realizing, okay, this is kind of my chances is doesn't have much more time. So I started feeling even a little bit more eager, and maybe you could say anxious, to make sure we really got to some of the good stuff. And so I would say that I knocked on some doors even a little bit harder. So it was taxing. I couldn't believe that, you know, it seemed never ending at times. And there were so many Sunday nights where I wanted to just be with my kids, and I was, you know, locked into my basement with the audio editor because I did all the editing of the interviews myself. And there was a point where I was looking for it to be over, but at the same time I was feeling like, oh, it's going to be over. And I noticed, you know, how much it meant to me to be able to have these conversations. And then ultimately, in the end, the part of it that was so beautiful is that there were so many thousands of people who didn't really know about me or my work, and they found about me through the series. And for every one person who wrote to me and didn't like my interviewing style or didn't like the way I worked with their, you know, chosen teacher, there were another 20 people who wrote with real gratitude about the possibility that arose in this kind of exchange. So as coming out of it, you know, because the series is done at this point that we're having this interview, when I turn my attention to my body and to my state of being, I feel combination of awe and great appreciation. It was a tremendous gift to be able to have gone through this. And, you know, one of my favorite musicals is Sunday in the Park with George by Stephen Sondheim, and my favorite song is called Finishing the Hat, which is about the subject of creativity and making things. And the last line of the song is, "Look, I made a hat where there never was a hat." And it always felt like that was the essence of the joy in creating. And so every once in a while I think to myself, like a year and a half ago, that whole idea was just something I cavalierly tossed off. And then it became this real thing with all of these emanations and moved forward into the Vulnerability Project. So I'm a little bit like a little boy in that way, just looking at all that and saying, wow, wow, I really made that. And that's probably the prominent feeling I have right now.
That's great. That's great. Kind of probing deeper into what that experience was like, were there times when the interviews, I'm sure that many, many of the interviews touched you and were satisfying because they were authentic meetings and being in which at least some level of vulnerability and authenticity was being evidenced by your conversation partner, and you were certainly able to address people at a deep level. But I think at times you probably found yourself surprised and challenged. I know that one of the ways that I most appreciate the benefits of doing the kind of work that I do is that when one of my students meets a moment in his or her life that is, you know, perhaps it's you know, in some cases it can even be with somebody who's you might say kind of new on the path and not as, you know, quote, far along, who are dealing for the most part with relatively, you know, well, you know, life issues that are you know, not about advanced practice at all. But what it takes to rise to the moment is a kind of originality. Nobody gets so far along the path that they ever kind of get good at what's really asked, because what's really asked of us is always an original act, and it has to be creative and new, and it's not the same as any previous moment. And so when a student does something that demonstrates a level of courage or heart or you know, commitment, to whatever, intensity, that exceeds what I am bringing, you know, maybe relative to somewhat more refined life, but which is asking, you know, it implicitly asks me to get out of my comfort zone even further. That's always such a gift, and that's one of the things that I always take the attitude that, you know, students and teachers are giving one another mutual gifts, and that we are all teachers and students to one another. So I'm wondering if you've found your definition of what vulnerability and emotional connection and availability was challenged in a way that took you out beyond your, what, you know, you're already so richly present and connected in so many ways, but how did this take you off the reservation into new territory, and what was it like? Can you tell us some stories about what that was like for you?
Well, as I'm listening to the question, my mind is going off in a number of different directions, so I'm going to try to corral those to get as many of them as I can. The first thing I want to say is that as you were describing that, I was thinking really honestly that it's the work that I do with individuals and couples in sessions which is where I'm really called to stretch in the way that you just described. And to be really honest, the interviews that I did with leaders in personal growth and spirituality most of the time didn't take me to the same place. it took me to some other places. So, and I want to touch on both of those arenas. So when I would speak, for instance, to the relationship experts in the series, almost instantly the things that they would say I would take very personally back into my own life. I would apply them to my primary relationship with my wife and even my history of personal relationships. And a lot of times I would feel an ouch or a sting, or behind the scenes I would even feel like I had been exposed somehow, not in a way that they had intended or that anybody else would know except me, but they would speak to something. And then suddenly I would have to say, okay, I have to get that. So, for instance, in the interview with Harville Hendricks and Helen LeKelly Hunt that focused on imago therapy, which is, of course, their great contribution, there was a moment where one of them said something about when you get triggered and you stay triggered, that you're not having a relationship with your partner. It's more like your defenses are having a relationship with their defenses. And, you know, I heard that, and then I just kind of curled up in a ball, so to speak, and felt like, yes, that happens. That really happens for me. And it was both humbling and also a call to pay attention and see if there was a way that I could move past that. So I think that's an example of where, as I was listening to people in the series, it was impossible for me not to hear the teachings and to take them personally, even if that happened afterwards in the reverberation of the interview, and even if sometimes it was challenging. So, for instance, Bruce Tift, who comes primarily from a Buddhist orientation, but he's a kind of a renegade couples counselor that I interviewed. One of the things that he talked about is that we make so many interpretations of ourselves, and most of the time they're just stories, and he finds himself to be a profound mystery. He's constantly mystified by the things that he does, and he actually wouldn't want it to be any other way. And that was really profound to me, because I'm, like so many of our listeners, a meaning-making machine, an interpreting machine. And I was being invited to drop that to some degree, and not just to say it is what it is about acceptance, but also that most of the time when I think I know who I am and why I do what I do, there's an element of pretend in that. So that was another thing that I took to heart. But also, he said something along the lines of, it's impossible to be in any significant personal relationship and not to be profoundly ambivalent about it. To, you know, have great draw towards one's partner and then also to be repulsed, to want to have intimacy and then want to not have anything to do with another person. And he was opening up a space in which everything was allowed. And at first that was really scary, and then it was really inviting. And I have to say, honestly, I'm still working with that, because I really want to live in that space. But it's not so easy to get there, and to try to understand when being completely clear about that kind of ambivalence is intimacy crushing or hurtful or unkind versus a real invitation to mutual liberation. So that's one where, as I say, you know, I'm still absolutely simmering. I don't feel really cooked in it, but it's been profound for me. But coming back around to the subject of my clients, individuals and couples, I have many moments when they have a breakthrough, or they bring something to their own life, as you were describing, that is really powerful and inspiring to me, and it feels like it calls me forward. Where, even though, you know, as you said, there's relative places that we might find ourselves on the spiritual journey, that goes totally out the window. somebody makes a brave, bold move toward their own freedom when there's a tremendous amount of pain or challenge involved in that, and I come away just asking myself, or it just happens, I don't even have to do it intentionally, it shines a light on places where I'm not as courageous in the present moment as that person just showed me, and it calls me to stretch and to grow, and that happens a lot, and it also is one of the things that makes what I do absolutely and profoundly fulfilling. You know, I used to make movies, and I still love that idea, and I may go back to doing that. But what happens after you make a film is that people watch it, and they tell you how moved they are by the film if they like it, and they tell you all the things they don't like if they don't like it. But they're in a process of aesthetic evaluation. Even if they took it personally, it's still something that moves them until the next thing grabs their attention. But in this realm, when we create intimacy together through our sharing, it's a creative act that resounds all over the place, and especially in my own life. And so I'm up for that, even though it's scary sometimes, and even though I have to look at things where I feel like, oh, you know, I thought I already looked at that, or like I've got too much on my plate to look at that. So those kind of sessions really feed me and take me to my own growing edge for sure. And then there's one last thing I just want to add in answer to your question, which is because I'm in a sort of unique situation, which is I don't have any special credentials and I'm not part of any organization that tells me how I can and can't do the work that I do. I'm constantly trying to reinvent how I can best meet people. And this is another place where I feel like I really want to stretch and have been stretching. So, for example, in the usual therapy or coaching mode, there is a sense that, you know, we have our session, you go do your thing, and then you come back and tell me about it a week or 2 weeks later or however that looks. And I felt for many people who are going through deeply healing journeys, that's absolutely not enough. And so I've been working really hard to try to figure out how to support them more fully in a way that doesn't make them dependent on me, but gives them the support to become more fully who they want to be. So one of the things that I've done, for instance, is started making recordings for people that they can play. So it's not just an affirmation that you buy in a store, but it's about you, and it's where you are and what you want to hear in your challenging moments that you can't access yet in yourself. And it's coming from me, who you trust because of our working relationship. And that's something that has been moving for me to do. I really love it, and people have really responded well. And then, you know, I'm just thinking of another situation where there was someone going through a big challenge, and it had a lot of intensity, and it was going to be of short duration. And I took another stretch, which is I said, you know, I'm going to be at my computer for that day where you're having this experience, and let me open up a texting app, and let's be in, you know, every couple hours, let's text back and forth so that we can feel the work that we're doing emanating throughout this challenge, and you really feel like you're in it, you know, for you, but also connected to someone so you're not alone. And I honestly have to say that, first of all, when I had that idea, I thought it was great, that it really scared me. You know, I thought, is that too much? Am I crossing a line? And I just, I felt both called to it, and then also, since it was so new, and since, you know, it had some risks to it, I was tentative, but I kept coming back to my conviction that I'm really promising to be fully present and there for people in the way that they need and that will most serve them. So I stayed with it, and it turned out to be a really powerful experience, I think, for both of us. But I also think some parts of it wouldn't have been navigated as well and wouldn't have created the gains for that person if we hadn't done it that way. So I'm even now, you know, I'm continuing to evolve and stretch and see where are the limits in what I can offer. Where are the ones that I just have to say, okay, that's a hard stop. That's a limit that, you know, is just there between people, versus where could we color outside the lines and create new methods of communion and support that can really create new transformation. So that's another growing edge for me, but one I'm really excited about.
Beautiful. You know, I'm curious, Ralph. That was I just want to take a moment, kind of an appreciation, an admiration break. That was just a lovely. All your answers have really been moving. This has been already really a. I'm restraining myself from going into our usual mode and sharing my piece. I'm going to stay interviewer here. but I have a question for you. Just I'm curious. How long are these recordings that you're creating for people? Just short recordings that speak certain essential things, or are they longer?
The ones that I've done so far have been, you know, anywhere from like 2 minutes to 5 minutes. But the thing about them is that we are co-creating them to some degree, because, as I said before, I think nobody in this situation wants dependency, either purposely or inadvertently created. So I ask the person to share with me what they would most like to hear, and we kind of collaborate back and forth a little bit before I actually would do a recording. So it's not a surprise to that person, and it feels to them like they're speaking to the most fragile part of themselves through me, which is a voice that they can hear sometimes when they wouldn't be able to actually hear their own inner voice through the flood that's happening in the moment. So in a way, I'm kind of a, what's the right word, like a surrogate version of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's really cool. How cool. I love hearing about these innovations that are spontaneously emerging in your work. It's great. Well, to press further into this territory, you had conversations with a great range of really highly evolved people, and each of them demonstrated, you know, significant human strengths and different kinds of freedom or awakening or potency, maybe. And I know that when I do interviews with people, I sometimes find that I get a transfusion of their psycho-spiritual DNA, and I grow through the process, but often they're just differently constituted than I am, and the parallax, the implicit comparison, wakes up an awareness of what it is I'm here to do that isn't the same and shouldn't try to be the same as this other person. And yet I benefit in a way, because I may land more fully in my own gift, in my own dharma, my own way of being. That was a real high-speed, you know, what is it, speed conversing. You know, you did quite a marathon, and you really connected with a lot of different energies. And as you feel the sequence of conjunctions, what did you discover about who you are, you know, uniquely, and what got activated that drew you into something that you've been becoming of late that you weren't when you began?
That's a great question. I feel like I could take that off to my cave and come back in a month and have a really fuller answer to it. But for a first pass, I think that there's a I was somebody who grew up, being told that I could do anything I wanted, that I was special, and that all I had to do was put my mind to it in order to create it. And that comes with real benefits and then also real drawbacks. But one of the things that carried me into my adult life that has, again, shadow and light to it, is that I've always looked for the kind of grand synthesis. Like, I can express this more fully or get all of this into something that's more simple and therefore communicatable to people. And then there, it's done. It's full. It's complete. And I think that mainly in doing the series, I was continually humbled. And what I mean by that is that I would share with a person, and then I would think that that person has something incredibly unique and powerful to share. And it's not me, it's not mine, and it can't be reduced into some kind of synthesis that I would pull off because I could make it happen. So on the one hand, there's just sort of a certain crushing nature to that. You know, what you want to do, your unified field theory of existence is impossible. That's just something that I have to, really own. And then at the same time, there's a liberating part of it, because it means that, something that was right there in your question is the key, and that is that none of us are supposed to create a grand synthesis. That's a crazy idea. And instead, what we're meant to do is take this beingness that comes through us and keep refining it into its uniqueness and offer that and really come to know deeply that that's what's right and that's enough. So when I would hear the unique expression of each of the teachers, in that way, it would allow me to relax more and more into just what is my way, and to allow me to get out of the way so that what is my way can just naturally come through. And I think that's something that I'm evolving into more and more. And it's sort of the way that in art they say God is in the details. You know, it's not like you have this grand idea for the movie or the painting that you want to make. It's the actual really, really small choices that make the difference. So I feel like I'm evolving into understanding what is meant to come through me. And, and then the question becomes, and this is what's really, I think, key for me, ultimately, what am I leaving out because of fear, because I feel maybe people can't handle it, because I feel like maybe I can't handle it? So I think that the multiplicity and the high-speed version of it that you were describing landed very much in me that way, which is a call to keep noticing what I'm leaving out, and then to also notice, would it be in service of my mission and in other people if I bring it in? And so recently, for instance, at one of the gatherings for my P4 year-long program, I asked people to kind of deepen the space by sharing one at a time what is something about themselves that they don't usually share in groups. And, of course, that really opens up the vulnerability and gives us a chance to be closer together. But I decided in that situation that I was going to take part rather than just facilitate. And whenever I do that, again, it's that same kind of risk that I talked about. like in terms of going to new ways of being close to people in supporting them through their challenges. In this situation, it's scary because if I say this thing about myself, will I lose what I have? Will I somehow not be holding the space? Will people react? Will their reactions not be, you know, what is really mostly meant to happen? And so I'm working with this all of the time, but the series really called me forward. So just to give another example, at that same retreat where the participants were asked to create some of the activities, one of the people created an activity, one of the groups created an activity where you write your own obituary as if you just died right now, and you focus on what's really materialized for you in your life, what you brought forward and manifested versus the things that you didn't yet get a chance to do or that you regret having done. And once again, I decided just to let my own uniqueness come through and really share that. And on the one hand, it was very moving for people. But on the other hand, it really did stir some things in people, hearing about me in ways that they hadn't before. And we were right on the edge of what was enough versus too much. And I think that it's easy for me to be safe. Like, I've been doing this for so long now that there are certain places I know I can go to that are reliable. But letting the uniqueness come through me takes me to these places where it's still alive for me. It's still a little bit scary because in the service of wanting to be fully me and fully present and fully offering my energy and heart to the space for everybody's benefit needs me to go to some places like that, which, as I said, are kind of scary and new. And I think I've really been inspired to do that by the series. And so that's another real gift that it's given to me.
I'm curious as to how much this emphasis on vulnerability, just for a moment, turning this interview in a little bit of a different direction, I can imagine if I try to put on the lenses of someone who looks at what you're doing and is devil's advocating it, you know, kind of critiquing, saying something to criticize the premise of what you've done, the critique that arises to my sensibility that seems most interesting in this moment might be, isn't there a kind of deconstructive thrust to this, as if you are asserting, no matter how much wisdom someone might have, the place of their vulnerability is place that needs to be spoken, and that place of commonality and humanity and connection is kind of the necessary ingredient that is deserving of emphasis. Whereas many of us come to a teacher in a kind of straight-ahead, not deconstructed way, where we simply want to experience the place where that teacher is clear and strong and not needing to learn so much, but standing in mastery and awakening and clarity. And is there a counterpoint to the emphasis of what you've done that might deserve more emphasis in some way? And to what degree did your voyage through this territory sensitize you to that, or to what degree does this question challenge you to look in a place you haven't before? You know, what arises when I surface that possibility that is that takes you into a new place, that opens something up?
Well, part of it, I think, is that to really be there as a teacher or a counselor or a coach for somebody is to have real skin in the game. And, you know, I know of a situation, doesn't have anything to do with me, where one person actually entered into what would be called in a certain way a love relationship with a client because he actually believed that that was the most transformatively healing possibility in that connection. I remember actually even in Scott Peck's book, The Road Less Traveled, there's some passages devoted to the idea that if he thought that having sex with a client was actually going to be healing for them, that he would do it because of his conviction to his work. He also then quickly went on to say that's never happened and he doesn't imagine it really would happen, but he was making an extreme point to let people know that if you're going to enter into these deep and sometimes dark places for people, you owe them something. You owe them everything, really. And so for me, what this all comes down to is to do my job is about being able to go into those places and sometimes be vulnerable and revealing, as we've been talking about, but also really incredibly mindful about where I'm still able to hold the space and where I might not be able to. And, you know, some years ago, I've made some mistakes in this regard, and I think anybody who really is taking it seriously probably does make some mistakes. But what I'm referring to is that if I ask someone to go into deep communion with me in their most raw vulnerability, and I meet them there, they're going to feel an exchange of energy and a connection that is intimate, truly. It can't not be intimate. But what ultimately they're trusting me for is to let them go into it completely because I've got the container. And I think in any situation where I didn't feel I had the container, I would instantly stop. I would say, you know, this isn't safe for you or for me. But I think that maybe one of my hopefully best skills, and I think one of the most important skills for anybody who really is a good attuner or communer or counselor, whatever term you want to use for it, is that fine art of being fully in it, but also being able at the same time to hold the space. And that is, and I mean this not in a cliche way, that is a moment-by-moment practice. So what I've been, you know, in terms of that devil's advocate kind of approach, it's important. It speaks to something that could be incredibly injurious to a person. If the one in my role in any given moment somehow crosses a line and can't hold the space, then as much good as could have happened otherwise, then that same amount of bad or hurt could happen. So I find myself ever more attuned moment by moment to that question. It's about self-revelation. It's about openness. It's about what gets stirred in me as a result of resonating with somebody else. And that is, I think, in a sense, the most important thing for me to be ongoingly mindful of. And without that, I think it would all be too risky for everyone. And as I said, I'm I'm really committed to the fact that if I ever start to feel like, okay, now I'm out on the skinny branches in that, that I would pull back and stop.
That's interesting. Going to the place where you identify the limit of that, of your choice to use that vulnerability muscle is where you landed. And that feels like a poetically perfect place to end the interview, because in a way it's like when you ease up to a stop sign, you let up on the brake so you don't have that little jerk at the end. It feels poetically perfect. This has been a very rich chance to drink deeply of many of the unique qualities that make you such a good friend and a good teacher and counselor. And it's been really a pleasure and a delight to spend this time with you, Raf. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And I just want to say that, you know, going back to my question at the beginning, would this conversation take me into places that I hadn't shared and offer something in transparency that was new? I have to say it did, and it allowed me to speak to some things that I've never actually said out loud before to anybody. And so now I've said it to the millions, the multitudes, and I'm really glad about it. So thank you so much for leading me there.
Wonderful.